D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan here with you, live at Bridgestone Arena. We're broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Derek Mason will be here momentarily. We are back at Bridgestone Arena. The SEC tournament has come and gone. Most of the signage is down, though the SEC Network logo is on the front of our desk here at Barrel House. Might need to change that. But we are back at Bridgestone Arena, as are the Nashville Predators. The Predators open up a homestand tonight against the St. Louis Blues. Puck drop at 7, pregame at 6. As always, right here on 102.5, 106.3, the game, the St. Louis Blues, 7-2-1 in their past 10 games. They are tied in points with the Vancouver Canucks for the final playoff spot in the Western Conference. This is the first of what, Willie, 3 matchups between the Predators and Blues over the next week to 10 days?
Yes, 3 in 10 days, and the Blues only have 14 games left, and they have made a really impressive charge to get that last playoff spot that's up for grabs in the West. And so you find out a little bit more about your team for next year. It's all about who wants to be along in next year's plan for the Predators. In particular, young players. Spencer Stastny and Luke Evangelista were benched against the Kings on Saturday in the Predators' last game, where they took the Kings. That's the best team they've played in a while, the Kings, and they took the Kings to overtime and lost 1-0. So they've been defending better, but now let's see what they can do against a team that has been scoring a ton of goals. St. Louis lit up the Ducks 7-2 in their last game. The Ducks have a big game against Vancouver on Thursday. So important game going down the stretch for the Predators here, and let's see if they can be the spoiler a little bit for their division rival.
There was some breaking news as it relates to the Nashville Predators this morning. Next season, the Predators will play 2 regular season games in Stockholm against the Pittsburgh Penguins on November 14th and 16th, the 3rd trip abroad for the Nashville Predators, but their first trip to Sweden. A couple of years ago, they opened the season in Prague with 2 games against the San Jose Sharks, but the NHL announcing today, Willie, that the Predators will play 2 regular season games in Stockholm next November, or this November, I guess you could say.
Yeah, big next news. Season. Big news. And I think a lot of details will come out in the coming months on that. But I can tell you that I had an incredible experience going to Bern, Switzerland, and then Prague for the regular season games. That was to open the year a couple of seasons ago. And I'll tell you what, I was fortunate to get the chance to go over there before. I don't know what the plans are for this one, but I'd love to get over to Sweden. I've never done it before, so I've heard great things about what that country is like, and it's a big thrill for Philip Forsberg and the other Swedish guys on the team, and who knows who'll be on that team next year, but I'm pretty sure number 9 will be, and he'll be a featured guy.
So, Willie, you were out in California last week with the Predators. They scored 1 goal in the back-to-back, correct, against the Ducks?
They did.
And Kings. They were shut out by the Kings. The 10th time this season that the Predators have been shut out. They were shut out a combined 10 times in the previous 2 seasons. The franchise record is 12. So the Predators, double-digit shutout losses this season for the first time in more than 20 years. I want to say it was the 2001-2002 season that the Predators were last shut out at least 10 times. But as they come back home, as you said, with an opportunity to play spoiler against the St. Louis Blues, they also have an interesting opportunity on Saturday against the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Maple Leafs have been struggling lately, although they did win last night, 6-2 against the Calgary Flames. So at this point of the season, playing spoiler is a big part of it, but you also want to see the continued maturation of the younger players. And where do you think that stands right now as it relates to the younger players in this lineup?
It's a bit of a work in progress. I think one thing that's improved, you mentioned the lack of scoring. That's been a problem all year. They're what, 31st in the league. They continue to struggle to score. But I do think overall, since the Four Nations face-off, where I think their record is 7-6-1, they have defended better. They still have had some big lapses at key times in games, and that's got to get better. But they are... I thought it was impressive how they matched L.A. in a tough back-to-back. L.A.'s got the best home record in the entire NHL. And to be even with them, even though it was not the high-event game, I thought that was a good sign that they've maybe taken a step forward with their defensive structure, but they've got to find more offense, of course. As far as the young players, I think it speaks a lot. Evangelista, who is battling an injury, right? He had a pretty significant injury before the Four Nations. I don't think he's 100%, but he's a guy that's trying to push through. He's at a crossroads, I think. They've got to sign him to a new contract, and he'll be back in there tonight. So they're trying to push the right buttons with him. You might see him, if practice is any indication, you might see Svechkov, Evangelista, and Zach LaRue, who just got back into the lineup, to at least start the game tonight. And those are guys that they would love to get contributions from to take steps forward. I think Svechkov shows some really good signs long-term. He's still on a big learning curve. And then the other guy that I mentioned is Spencer Stastny. He's another guy that struggled some in the Anaheim game. They gave him the day off on Sunday. They throw him back in there against the team that can really exploit you on the rush. So the Predators have to be in the right place.
I was reminded of this, Willie, as I was scrolling X yesterday, as is my wont, and somebody posted a picture of just... you're in your classroom, and your teacher wheels in the television, and the caption was, you know, kids these days don't understand how thrilling it was on the first day of the NCAA tournament when your teacher wheeled in the TV, you know, the big,
oh, yeah,
the big fat TV with the big back. Kids these days don't realize how heavy TVs used to be.
Oh,
they
yeah.
weren't all flat screens. And I'm reminded of that as the NCAA tournament kicks off tonight. I know it's not the 64-team portion of the tournament. It's the first four with two games, St. Francis and Alabama State and San Diego State. And I've never been a bigger Aztecs fan in my life than I am tonight as San Diego State takes on North Carolina in the first four. But this time of year is my absolute favorite time of year. I remember going to class and not paying attention in class because I had CBS Sports up on my laptop streaming all the games. There was a time when you could not watch every March Madness game. You had to get
you had to go to a sports bar.
You had to go to a sports bar, or it was sort of like the NFL now. If you don't have NFL Sunday ticket, you get the games in your region, and that's what you get.
Yeah, and you had to hope that they would switch to a game that was a blowout. And this used to be a thing if, let's say Channel 5 took the Kentucky game years ago. And let's say Kentucky's a one seed playing a 16. And Kentucky's up by 30 points with 10 minutes to go. Well, you would hope that Channel 5 would switch to a game that was much more competitive. Because you're like, I want to watch the other game that's going on. But as soon as they would do that, a million Kentucky fans would then call Channel 5 and say, get the Kentucky game back on. What are you guys doing? It used to drive the late Mark Howard crazy because he might have been the guy making the call, right? Say, let's go to a better game. But now you don't have to worry about that anymore.
I distinctly remember back in 2001, so I would have been 11 going on 12, and Duke was playing in the first round of the tournament against Monmouth in a 1-16 matchup. And I would love to go back and look at the box score. But what I remember is Duke jumped out to a 9-0 lead within the first 2 minutes of the game. Monmouth didn't even make it
Monmouth.
Monmouth.
That's not Mound. It's not a mound. It's not a pitcher's mound.
Sorry. Monmouth.
The Hawks.
Yes.
I think he's still the coach, King Rice, who played at your favorite place, North Carolina, and then was an assistant at Vanderbilt. Another assistant that I played under, Rick Callahan, is on his staff. So I do know a little bit about the Monmouth Hawks.
So Monmouth did not get to the under 16 timeout before having to take a timeout. I want to say it was like 9-0 Duke. They go to commercial, and Greg Gumbel is in the studio and says, well, we're going to take you to another game now. So I remember the first game of that tournament run for Duke, I watched 2 minutes of the game because then they switched to another game that was far more competitive. Now that's not an issue because every game is at your fingertips.
Right. And so it's probably not a good thing for sports bars, even though I still think there's nothing like watching at a sports bar with a lot of people when there's multiple games on. It's like a national holiday. I think it's great on Thursday and Friday. They actually also stagger the games a little bit more than they used to. But the first couple days, I love when there's two or three games going on at once. It is a lot of fun to follow them all. So I'm looking forward to that. But the first four tonight, there's going to be a lot of people watching North Carolina. And there were some people that really did not hold back at all on the conspiracy theory. They're all in. Yesterday was flooded. You thought your rant was something, Adam. I mean, people are going no holes barred on the incentive thing of Cunningham, where their TV dictates, you know, North Carolina will get higher ratings than a Boise State or somebody like that, or a West Virginia. And so, you know, there's an interest in TV to have a higher profile program in that first four. Like, there was all kinds of conspiracy theories going on. I'm sure D-Mace loved to hear about that. He loves a good conspiracy. So North Carolina is on. If they get slaughtered tonight, that's only going to fuel the governor of West Virginia, who continues. How is the launch of the investigation?
The investigation has been launched.
It's been launched.
I believe. Okay. The launching has happened. Who knows how far it will go. But by the way, I want to tell everybody that you can come play hooky with 102.5 and 106.3 the game this week. This Thursday and Friday. We will be at Boomba's Pizza and Watch Bar from 9 to 6 on Thursday. We will be at the Boomba's in Murfreesboro, and on Friday, we will be at the Boomba's in Spring Hill. So that's Thursday and Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Come enjoy award-winning pizza, handcrafted beverages, win prizes, and watch the games with us as the tournament gets underway in full force. Derek Mason is here. We are just experiencing some technical difficulties with the headset. Fortunately,
we've called in the chief. We've called in the suit.
The suit is here, Chase McCabe. He is still working on it. So we endeavor to fix that. So
we
that
are we, troubleshooting, yes. As we like to say in the business.
It's not like when we were younger or when I was younger and you had to blow on the game cartridges to make them work.
I've tried that move.
I had Super Nintendo, and if it didn't work, you just go. There's no scientific data to support that actually works, but
I feel like it did work.
It did work a
lot. Anecdotally. Yeah.
It did work a lot. So Derek Mason is here. We just endeavor to get him on air. We'll blame the SEC for this. The SEC was here.
There's no question.
Yes.
It is Greg Sankey's fault.
It just means more to break everybody else's equipment.
Oh, wait. We have a breakthrough.
We've got a slight tap.
I hear taps.
Let's see.
Check it in.
Hello? No.
I hear echoes.
I can hear something. But
it's not coming through.
Yeah.
It's coming through our mics, not yours. So D-Mace is he's here. That's proof that you're here. You're just not coming through very loud.
Greg Sankey, we will be sending you the bill.
Yes.
For our
sabotage.
Yes. For
we got it.
You got it?
Yay.
Yes. D-Mace is active.
Okay, now
he's activated.
Okay, now turn it down a little bit. Turn it down a little bit. He's 51 years of listening.
Thank you, everybody.
Time. There we go.
As we troubleshoot. Yes.
Suit.
All right. Thank you, Chase.
Yeah, that's what you get paid the big bucks for.
The suit is the man. It took him 2 minutes.
All of 2 minutes.
If that were me trying to do that, I would have knocked the whole station off the air. So we're glad that that
we've gone
happen.
From one mic not working to three mics not working. And for me, I would have just unplugged the whole thing and it would have been gone.
I don't think there's anything that I can blow on to make that work. unlike my Super Nintendo cartridges. So yes, we will be out at Boomba's on Thursday and Friday, the Murfreesboro location on Thursday, the Spring Hill location on Friday. So come play hooky with us. Watch some basketball, eat some delicious food, some delicious pizza, and I will try not to be distracted. I'm telling you guys, so remember, last week we were all in different locations at one point. Willie was in California with the Predators. Derek was battling the flu, so he was at home. I was at the time, Assembly Food Hall, watching the Duke game when Cooper Flagg went down with his sprained ankle. And I'm telling you guys, I had a difficult time getting through those segments. I was physically ill. So hopefully we will have more fun watching the games on Thursday and Friday. Speaking of the NCAA tournament, Devin McLaughlin, Vanderbilt forward, will join us today at 12:30.
Can't wait.
Vanderbilt taking on St. Mary's in the first round of the NCAA tournament. That game scheduled for Friday, a roughly 2:15 central tip-off against St. Mary. So Devin McLaughlin, Vanderbilt forward, will join us at 12:30. Looking forward to that conversation.
Devin McLaughlin is a former walk-on at Boston College. Played a couple years there. Jumped into the portal. And like about 10 guys, jumped in with Vanderbilt and Mark Byington and his carved out a great role. He's had some big, big plays during the course of the year. He's a very important player for them. Can hit the standstill three, battles as an undersized guy who often is guarding a guy 6'10", 6'11". And St. Mary's has got size. There's no question about it. So he will be a very important guy for Vanderbilt in their first game against St. Mary's. I'm looking forward to just talking to him about what this has been like, just meshing with all these new guys, accomplishing this, and now looking forward to a challenge, playing somebody outside the SEC. Like, I'm sure all these teams are like, man, I can't wait to play somebody who's not in our league.
Yeah, it's going to be good for Vandy. You know, it's going to be interesting to see which team they allow play. And
how the game's going to be officiated, that's huge.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Because if the game if they're allowed to play with a level of physicality that we saw them play with during the SEC.
Yeah. And I think the whole league is like that.
Yeah.
There's no question.
So if they're allowed to go in and play physical basketball, then I think Vanderbilt has an opportunity to advance. And I think they could end up shocking people. But that's the central question with the SEC. With every team, will the tournament allow them to play that physical brand of basketball that they play all during the season? If you read some articles, and I read Rex Rhodes' article about the SEC.
And we will get deep into the SEC later in terms of what the conference has to accomplish in this tournament to back up its greatest conference ever talk.
Exactly. So, but the part that I zeroed in on is the physicality part that was brought up, you know, wearing each other down. Will that ultimately be a negative for the SEC moving into the tournament? So, listen, if they allow Vandy to play the physical brand of basketball that they've been playing all year, then I can see them really going far in this tournament. I can see them shocking a few teams here and there. But if not, then guys like McLaughlin and Carey, those guys got to do a tremendous job, especially in the first half, at staying on the floor.
615-737-1025. Your thoughts on the upcoming the NCAA tournament. The SEC tournament is over. That's why we're here. The NCAA tournament, which kicks off tonight, although the main tournament starts on Thursday. And once again, we will let you know that we will be at Boombaz on Thursday and Friday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., the Murfreesboro location of Boombaz on Thursday, the Spring Hill location on Friday. So come join us, watch some basketball, have some delicious food. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck will join us as we dive into the NFL draft and more. Preds fans, don't miss Smashville Live tomorrow night at Brewhouse South in Franklin at 6 p.m. See your Predator star players up close and personal, and also get autographs and pictures. Tomorrow night's guest will be Jonathan Marchessault. That's Jonathan Marchessault tomorrow night at Brewhouse South in Franklin.
Do
Mace Vingan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our very good friend, Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Tim, this morning I was checking over Mel Kiper's latest mock draft on ESPN.com, and I was seeing a lot of the familiar names in the top 10. He has Cam Ward going to the Titans, Abdul Carter going to the Browns, Shedeur Sanders going to the Giants. I get down to number 9, and I'm stopped in my tracks. Mel Kiper has Jackson Dart, the quarterback out of Ole Miss, going 9th overall to the New Orleans Saints. That caught me by surprise. I know that Jackson Dart turned a lot of heads at the NFL Combine, but what do you make of Jackson Dart apparently skyrocketing up draft boards?
I'm actually not surprised by it. I think he has a lot of traits that you would want in a quarterback that goes in the first round. I think there have been, like, if you were to test physically, you say, okay, height, height, weight, strength, mobility, arm strength. If you were to do that in comparison to Shedeur Sanders, like, Jackson Dart probably wins every category. And so, I think you look at that, you look at the fact that he played a lot of football in college. You know, that's something I've talked about a lot. Like, just, for some perspective, like, Cam Ward, if you include Incarnate Word and the other stops, like, he's going to, leave college with, over 2,300 pass attempts. And Jackson Dart, in similar fashion, not nearly as much as Cam Ward, but he's played a lot of football. And so, kind of like Bo Nix, where, here's a guy who, has first-rounder traits, right? Size, strength, athleticism, the what you kind of expect out of a first-round quarterback. I think Jackson Dart possesses a lot of those, and so it doesn't really surprise me.
A lot of new quarterbacks in new places, Tim. Sam Darnold in Seattle, Geno Smith in Las Vegas, Justin Fields with the New York Jets, Daniel Jones lands in Indianapolis. Which quarterback landed in the best situation for him?
Well, I would probably pick two guys specifically. I don't know that I thought Daniel Jones was still a starter, would have an opportunity to be a starter. So the fact that he goes to a place, and then when you see his contract, to say, look, he's going to end up as a, he most likely will end up as the starter in Indy, that's pretty good living right there. And I would say a similar thing for Justin Fields. Justin Fields' contract is not backup money, which really what he was last year. I mean, he basically gets beat out by Russell Wilson. He signs way better than backup money and goes to a place that, look, if they don't draft a quarterback, he's going to find himself, in a situation where he's the guy. So I think anytime there's somebody that is fighting for their future as a starting quarterback in the National Football League, and then they find themselves as the presumed starter, at least at some point during the year, as they enter into training camp, that's a big-time win for those guys.
Now, Tim, you did mention Daniel Jones as one of those guys that may have ended up in a perfect situation. If indeed Daniel Jones beats out Richardson, what then does happen? What happens then to Richardson? Do you think it will be another Darnold and J.J. McCarthy sort of situation when he's up to speed, when we feel he's ready, we're going to throw him back in there? Or could it be a situation where Daniel Jones ends up playing well enough to sign a longer-term contract there?
Yeah, and I don't know that it's as much about Daniel Jones, because I'm not convinced that he'll play well or he'll stay healthy, right? I mean, just look at his track record of, just inability to, play the entire season and be healthy and then continue to, really be a consistent passer throughout the entire season. He hasn't been able to do those things. So, you know, I do think, like, what happens to Jones and then what happens to Richardson, you know, I think are going to exist, like, in totally separate scenarios, right? So, and the reason I say that is Daniel Jones could fail and Anthony Richardson could still end up like Trey Lance, right? It doesn't mean – or Jones could have success, and I think that's probably the most similar path, you know, for Richardson in terms of Trey Lance. I say that because of this. I referenced Cam Ward and pass attempts, you know, coming out of college. Do you realize that Anthony Richardson left college with 348 pass attempts? Like,
wow,
ever.
That's one season.
And so
it's
now
not
think
a lot.
About this.
Yeah.
So now he's played in the NFL for a couple of years, but because of injuries and whatever, like, he that's his NFL pass attempts, right? And then you go to college and, like, it's the same thing. Like, it's fewer than that. So, like, when I say that, like, you can't get better. You can't be good if you don't get the reps doing it at the toughest position in sports. So, like, I just – that to me is, like, there's a time on task element. So I say all that, D. Mace, just to say that, like, if he's splitting time with Daniel Jones, then he's not playing. And, like, you're not going to get better if you haven't been doing it. And he hasn't been. And that was kind of always my issue on the Trey Lance front. And I think it applies in a very big way to Anthony Richardson.
Now, Tim, do you think someone's going to convince themselves? Because, like Adam said, Jackson Dart seems to be moving up the charts. And we see this each and every year, especially when there may not be a consensus 1, 2, 3, then all of a sudden there's only one guy, then all of a sudden there's two or three guys, and then it ends up being, you know, team possibly forcing themselves into drafting a guy that they probably any other draft year they wouldn't draft him. But do you think as this process continues to go that Jackson Dart or anyone else outside of the two guys that we've talked about, do you think they will start entering the picture more and more and realistically get drafted in that top 15?
I think Jackson Dart likely will. I don't know that anybody else makes it into the top 15. I do think that there's a chance that somebody just absolutely loves Tyler Shuck from Louisville. You know, I would just say this in terms of, you know, people talking themselves into something. And let me, hopefully this isn't long-winded, but let me preface this by this. When I look at a quarterback, I believe that arm strength is the trait that can mislead you the most in terms of quarterback evaluation, right? So, like, Tom Brady is never going to go down as having the best arm strength ever. Neither is Peyton Manning. Neither is Drew Brees. And you can run down the list of guys, you know, like, look, Steve McNair had a strong arm, but it wasn't like that wasn't the trait that you just had to follow everywhere you went to be like, yep, that's the reason he's going to be good. Like, there was other things about his game that made him great. And I think that, and so I tend to, when I evaluate quarterbacks, I think not weigh just like the physical attributes as much as some other people do. Right. So, look, I'm going to like some – like, I liked Kirk Cousins coming out more than, you know, some other people did. And because I wasn't bothered by what people thought his physical skills were. So I say all that is I tend that direction, okay? Now, I also think that there's a difference between Matthew Stafford and – somebody that doesn't have those physical attributes, right? The ability to do those things. And so I do think it matters, but I think if you lead with that, you can get yourself into trouble. So I'm going to bring this to Shedeur Sanders. I think that he's a really good quarterback. I think he's been coached well to play the position. I think he knows how to play the position. I think he has things about him that translate to success long-term at the position in the NFL. Okay. And I'm going to say this, and like I hope people are going to hear it initially as an insult, and let me explain it. I think his upside is Andy Dalton. That's what I think Shedeur Sanders is because of what he is physically. Now, listen, Andy Dalton's thrown over 250 touchdown passes in the NFL. Like, he's been a wild success. But no one ever thought Andy Dalton was a top five pick. So, like, I don't know if I'm making that distinction clear enough. Like, that to me is the difference. It's no different than when Teddy Bridgewater came out and people thought I was being critical of Teddy Bridgewater when I said, look, I think his ceiling is Alex Smith. And, like, Teddy Bridgewater didn't have Alex Smith's career. You know, and so I think when we're talking about that top 15, and I said the same thing to you guys about Mac Jones when he came out, like, when the guy has athletic deficiencies, when you are going to play a sport that's got some of the most, you know, freakish athletes on the planet playing it, I do think if you're going to be talking about the rarefied air of the first 15 picks, I do think it matters. And so it's a long way for me to say, like, I do think people are going to feel like they've got a forced hand on Shedeur Sanders.
It's a great point, and it leads me right into the question I wanted to ask you. And you've put the pathway out there. Tim Hasselbeck is with us. So I saw a study done, I think it was out of Cleveland. Tony Grossi, I think, has done a lot of research here. Last 5 years, there's only two quarterbacks starting that were drafted outside the first round. I think Brock Purdy is one, and obviously Jalen Hurts is the other. There's other guys who were drafted in the second round, but it was previous to the last five drafts, like Geno Smith. He doesn't count in that. So it is hard to find your quarterback outside the first round. I think it was his point. Mm-hmm. So, but all of those things you said about Sanders and some of these other guys. So, to me, if you're the Titans, is Cam Ward worth the first pick in the draft? It's different than saying Cam Ward is a first-round pick and take him with the first pick. So is he that much of a physical upside to warrant that kind of pick?
So here's what I would say about that. And so I hope this doesn't sound like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth on it. If you believe that somebody is a 10-year starter, right, a decade-long starter, and will play at a starter level or a high level for that stretch, I think it's okay to draft that guy anywhere. You know,
okay.
So you see him, so like, so when I say that,
even if he's
like,
Andy Dalton,
revisionist history. Yeah, look, with the look, I mean, I don't have it in front of me of like who the Bengals picked in the first round, you know, while Andy Dalton was around there, but like, I would bet you that he meant more to the franchise than any of those other guys, right?
Right. Like they were a laughing stock for a long time. Yeah, and Andy Dalton right? gave them some really good years.
Stabilized them, took them to the playoffs four times, like all the stuff. So, like, you know, so I say that to say when Matt Ryan was coming out, I mean, it was like, oh, you can't, guy threw 19 interceptions at Boston College's last year, doesn't have elite arm strength. So, Miami Dolphins, nope, can't do it. Look, so they drafted Jake Long. Look, they got Jake Long right. They drafted a really good player. But, like, wouldn't they have been better off by drafting the quarterback? They would have, because they would have stabilized the most important position. So, you know, so what I'm saying is like, if a guy can be a decade-long starter, then it is okay to take him anywhere. But, like, it just always kind of bothers me when we do these draft, you know, comparisons. You know, everybody is, you know, every left tackle, like the comparison is Jonathan Ogden. It's like, no. Like, who's the Mike Roos, right? Like, who's the, because like, it's going to be that guy too. Like, and that's okay. That's a first rounder. That's a decade long starter. Like, I just think sometimes our comparisons are wrong. And I also think the expectations are wrong. So if you knew that you were drafting Andy Dalton, and some, that's why I'm saying it, for a lot of people, initially, it'll sound like an insult. But if you knew you were drafting Andy Dalton, you got the pick right.
Even, so, but there's extra pressure on the first pick, don't you think, from the fans?
Yeah, there is. And so here's what I would say about Cam Ward. Cam Ward, he has, like, elite traits. Like, his ability to throw the football is different than Shedeur's, different than Andy Dalton's when he came out. And I think when you look at the pass, okay, and I've referenced this before, And so it's like the evidence of proof of like, what can the guy do? You're not evaluating 393 attempts. You literally have the ability to evaluate 2,400 attempts on Cam Ward. So like, there should be way less mystery on Cam Ward than there is when you're drafting Mark Sanchez with 17 starts in college, or, you know, Anthony Richardson's few starts, or Trey Lance's situation. Look, and I think that's one of the reasons why, like, you know, people miss when they looked at, or I'll give you another example of a guy who played a lot of football. Go look at Bo Nix, you know, so like there's so much to evaluate and say, wait a second, and he has these physical traits and he has that time on task. Yeah, this is worth it. So, yeah, like I do think Cam Ward has the traits to make it worth it.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, joining us here on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Tim, a pleasure as always. We'll talk next week.
Sounds good. See you, fellas.
615-737-1025. Some really interesting stuff
there. That's interesting stuff, big time.
We will react to what Tim had to say, and you can react as well at 615-737-1025. This week's Nashville's Best Deal is from Streetcar Taps and Garden. Patio season is here. Enjoy great food, cold drinks, and fresh air on Streetcar Taps and Garden's covered patio. Get half off a $30 gift card now before they are gone at thegamenashville.com/deals.
Is Cam Ward worth the first pick in the draft? It's different than saying Cam Ward is a first-round pick and take him with the first pick. So is he that much of a physical upside to warrant that kind of pick?
So here's what I would say about that. And so I hope this doesn't sound like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth on it. If you believe that somebody is a 10-year starter, right, a decade-long starter, and will play at a starter level or a high level for that stretch, I think it's okay to draft that guy anywhere. You know, So when I say that,
even if he's Andy Dalton,
revisionist history. Yeah, I don't have it in front of me of like who the Bengals picked in the first round. You know, while Andy Dalton was around there, but like I would bet you that he meant more to the franchise than any of those other guys.
That was Tim Hasselbeck just now on our program. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you live at Bridgestone Arena. Predators versus Blues tonight at 7:00. Some really interesting stuff there, gentlemen, from Tim Hasselbeck, because I've seen a plenty of this with it looking like the Titans are going to draft Cam Ward. It seems like all of the signs are pointing in that direction. But I'm seeing a lot of Cam Ward is 15th on this big board. So why would the Titans draft the 15th best player with the number one overall pick? But drafting is an inexact science, as we know. And he compared Shedeur Sanders' ceiling to Andy Dalton, right? Mm-hmm. When you hear that...
Well, yes, Sanders, yes.
Yes, Shedeur Sanders. When you hear that, you're thinking, Andy Dalton? Why would I want to take... Mel Kiper's latest mock draft has Shedeur Sanders going third to the Giants. If you're a Giants fan and you were listening to that, you hear Andy Dalton and you think to yourself, why would I want to draft Andy Dalton with the third pick in the NFL draft? Andy Dalton, by the way, was an early second round pick.
He was the 35th pick overall.
In the second NFL
round.
Draft.
Yep.
So it really is interesting because we talked about this last week. Uh-huh. If the Titans think that Cam Ward is that franchise quarterback, it doesn't matter what any of us say or what Mel Kiper says or Matt Miller or Daniel Jeremiah or Field Yates. It doesn't matter what any of them say if the Titans feel that way. But this is, I think, an interesting subject right now because Cam Ward is not considered that sort of can't-miss quarterback prospect like Jaden Daniels was or Caleb Williams was or Joe Burrow was. And I think people, Derek and Willie, have it in their mind that if you are going to take someone with the number one pick, they better be on that level.
I don't think people realize how hard it is to get that guy, because they look at – you know, what Washington was able to do with their pick, what it seems like Chicago's able to do with their pick and Caleb Williams, how it looks as if Caleb Williams is going to be that guy. You look at Patrick Mahomes later in the first round at 12. So when you start to look at quarterbacks, in your view, is Patrick Mahomes, Jaden Daniels, let's just go to the young quarterbacks and start with Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams. When your view is just that, those guys, you're going to get a little tainted. And you're going to say, well, why can't we get one of those guys? Well, one of those guys don't come every draft. That's why we're having the long discussion about the guys that are in this draft, because no one feels as if they're those guys.
Right. We bring up the word generational, right?
Yeah,
We've banned that from this show.
Guys, yes.
But for the purpose of this argument, the reason why prospects are considered generational mm-hmm. is because, by definition, they come around once in a generation. There are not generational players in every draft. Now, do the Titans wish, perhaps, that they would have been in this position a year ago mm-hmm. when they could have taken Caleb Williams or Jaden Daniels or Drake May? Sure. I'm sure Titans fans feel the same way. But, Willie, I thought Tim made some really interesting points just about the evaluation of quarterbacks and this idea. We talked about this as well. We read these mock drafts and we see this player is comparable to this player. And I feel oftentimes when it's an elite player, that those are incredibly lofty expectations that are not normally met.
Seattle and Philadelphia show you can do it without a number one pick in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
They showed it. Philly showed it twice. Seattle showed it once with mm-hmm. Russell Wilson. So there are other ways or other avenues to a championship. And if I told you that, okay, this is you're going to draft this guy at number one, and basically he's going to average 26 touchdowns and 12 interceptions, but he's going to throw for about 38 to 4,000 yards per season and complete about 62% of his passes. What would you take that as a quarterback anywhere?
I think you would take that as a fan base.
Because that's winning football, and that's what Andy Dalton was to Cincinnati.
That's the problem, though, when you're the first pick. There are probably unrealistic expectations. Even if you look through history at the first picks in the draft, they don't all turn out to be Joe Burrow or Peyton Manning.
More bust than anything.
Yes.
When it comes to that position.
No question. So, at the same time, I think Tim's point is, if you get a 10-year starter that is steady, like Andy Dalton or Alex Smith, that's a good pick. That's good use of the pick. Now, I'm still not one that is sitting there going, they're going to take Cam Ward. I'm not there. I still think there are options there, and I think you continue to shop. I don't think you should make up your mind right now. You continue to work it. If you do think he's the guy, then eventually, I'm not saying they won't take him, but I'm not saying it's a given. But I think it's a great question of how you would feel if he ends up being something in the ballpark of Alex Smith or Cam Ward and not the quote-unquote franchise quarterback. Because people think, you got to have a franchise player with the first pick.
615-737-1025. We will take your thoughts on that. Some really interesting comments there by Tim Hasselbeck. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, the NCAA tournament. It starts tonight. The main event starts on Thursday. Wall-to-wall basketball on Thursday and Friday. Two of my favorite sporting days of the year. The SEC, it's talked a big game this regular season, deservedly so. What must the SEC accomplish in the NCAA tournament to live up to the best conference ever talk? We will get into that next. 615-737-1025. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, by the way, is presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, the game.